This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. To talk to Brian, Jeff, or Vic, dial 355-NFL1. That's 355-6351. Jaguars This Week is also sponsored by Prudential Network Realty, Ticket Exchange, and the Jacksonville Transportation Group. This is your exclusive home for the Jacksonville Jaguars. AM 690 and 106.5 FM. News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Good evening. Welcome to Jaguars This Week from the Forbidden Forest of Alltel. Did I say Alltel? Jeez, I was just looking at an old sign. Jacksonville Municipal Stadium. Brian Sexton along with Jeff Loggeman, Vic Ketchman, Joe Fortunato. They're laughing because it's forbidden for players to be here this week since the Jaguars OTAs were removed.
Forbidden Forest is good. We're doing a radio show from a facility that has been deemed off limits to football players. So what do you want to talk about, guys?
World Cup. Let's talk about the World Cup.
No. We don't. No World Cup.
And I certainly don't want to talk the politics and oil with you.
No, we don't want to talk about the oil leak either.
We don't want to go anywhere near
that. Hey, but if you do, call us up, 355-NFL1, if you'd like to join us on the program this evening.
I will say this, though, in that the NFL came down and said, you know, you lost your last 2 days of OTAs, and no player is allowed at the facility for an entire week. What sense does that make?
They're actually allowed to come for treatment. But that's it.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
No lifting weights.
Why?
Hey, it's your union.
No, I know that.
Association, right?
But, I mean, there are guys that, are trying to attain certain things physically and not allowing them in a weight room, which is by far a supreme facility. I mean, it's the best of the best. You can't get that, you know, by going to your local gym or the type of training that you can get somewhere else. You know, hey, there's nothing wrong with players being able to take a couple days off. But if they want to come in, they certainly should be allowed to come in and get a workout on their own time. And to me, that was ridiculous.
Well, let me give you a brief commentary that I have no doubt will get me in trouble. Yet I...
you persist.
I'm good at that, so I'll give it to you. The DeMora Smith and the union didn't think this one out. They have lost a PR battle on this one. With the complaints about the difficulty of OTAs and having shut down four teams OTAs prematurely.
Ravens, Raiders, Lions, Jaguars.
Mm-hmm. Four, and they're saying could be more.
Okay.
It has embittered the fans. You see, it sent a message to the fans that we really haven't bought in. And we're really not on board. And we don't want to do more. We want to do less. And we're snitches. You know, all these things are negatives.
You're right.
And there was a PR... there was a PR issue in this that I don't think DeMora Smith and the union saw, and they have not created much in the way of goodwill for themselves on this. Whereas the league, with its sensitivity to the union's complaints, has won a little, let's say, pre-CBA negotiations battle.
All right, since you say that, where does it stand right now with the American Needle case?
Well, wait a minute. But before you go there, and I want to kind of expand because I'll give you what I've got, okay, from friends of mine or people that I know. What's the matter? Players don't want to work a little hard?
You got it.
What's the matter? They're making all that money. They can't go out there and practice a little bit in the off season.
Perception is reality.
But they don't like to work hard. And that's what I've been hearing, and that's what Vic is talking about because that perception – doesn't benefit the players in the union.
This was an image defeat for the union. They should have just, hey, finish up the OTAs, keep your mouth shut, finish up the OTAs. They're voluntary. If you don't want to go, don't go. Although that's really that. No, I shouldn't have said that because for the marginal players, they have to go.
It's voluntary as far as
for stars.
Teams cannot take money out of their pocket if they choose not to come.
It's voluntary for star players, for marginal, for guys competing for roster spots. It is mandatory. I mean, clearly, they got to be there or they're going to lose a spot. But what Jeff said is what I'm getting. It's not a big deal, but I don't think DeMaurice Smith fully considered the PR loss that they would suffer in doing what in the complaining.
All right. So just today, June 23rd, 2010, where's the leverage point? Who has it right now? I mean, we talked about what the American Needle case.
It's still players. The players still have it. Yeah. I mean, it's. I mean, they're in a situation here where, for let me give you an example. People are asking me all the time, well, why don't they just go with replacement players after they lock them out? Well, because these players have contracts with these teams, and if you try to play and with other players, well, then the real players, the union will decertify, and the real players will show up and say, hey, I'm here to play. I've got a contract with you, and you owe me $14 million.
Pretty simple.
Yeah. For instance, Jay Cutler, I use $14 million because his contract spiked to $14 million in 2011.
Right.
Darrell Revis was another guy whose contract spiked in 2011. Those contracts.
Which is why he's not getting a new deal.
Probably.
Because they want to use it against him.
Exactly. These contracts were spiked intentionally to let these players know, hey, if you don't do a new CBA, you're going to lose out on a really big salary. Right, Jeff?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's smart. It's the
way
it's done.
Well, it was spiked for two reasons. For one, I think to provide players motivation to come in.
Knowing
that they would be missing the money. Yeah. But also in that the owners anticipated that this would be an uncapped year in 11.
Right.
So they knew that they could backload contracts that would be totally away from a salary cap.
Okay. So the owners had the leverage until, and this is my opinion, I'm not speaking for the league because they say this is not true, but I think the American Needle case hurt them.
And if, for those of you who are not familiar with it, Vic, it was Reebok and, what was it, Reebok? It was American Needle, who is an apparel manufacturer.
Hat company.
They wanted the ability to make NFL hats and gain licenses from teams to use their marks, their logos, and they were denied because the league had collectively bargained with Reebok and given them exclusive rights. And American Needle argued in the Supreme Court that it was antitrust for them to collectively sell their rights.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Let's not go there.
All right. Well, there's people listening, though, that don't understand the American Needle case.
And they're just turning their radios off. Right. I mean, I don't blame them. I don't blame them. I don't even want to go there. I don't even want to know about it.
Well.
But anyhow, the players were only allowed to be here this week if they had a pre-existing injury and needed treatment. I saw Kyle, the Boz, you know.
He's not the boss. He's a nephew.
He's our boss.
Kyle Bosworth.
I'll tell you what. I look at him, and I see some of the boss in him. I mean, his face.
Yeah, you can see the angular features on his face.
The angular faces, features in the eyes, too.
Nice guy.
Yes, he is. He's a real good
nice
kid.
Nice guy.
I didn't hear any weightlifting down here, you know, clink, clink. So I think they're playing by the rules. And I didn't see anybody walking past my door on the way to the field to work out. No, I think a lot of the coaches have been gone. So this has been a somewhat forgotten week. And I think what we need to do tonight and what's left of the show is, well, let's go ahead and talk about expectations. Let's talk about predictions. Let's talk about, let's do some hot stove stuff.
But before, everybody, the other thing that I've gotten about this whole thing, who is the snitch?
It could be me.
Who is the snitch?
I mean that seriously.
And you know what? I honestly wanted to tell people, and I did not, that it was Vic Ketchman.
It may have been. Jack.
His writings on the website, his commentary on
the
radio.
Well,
in the week
before
that.
I mean, I wrote, and I said on the show, and I wrote, these are the most intense OTAs I've ever seen. All right, but I'll tell you. If I get the blame here now, there's two other guys and one other thing that gets the blame. That McQuiston kid, what's his name?
Paul McQuiston.
Yeah, Walter Curry
and
Paul McQuiston, that little 2-second fight.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, that made headlines in Jacksonville. That was a major player in the intensity complaint.
Okay.
All right. But the real one, the one that I think put this one over the top, was that run over practice. The one that ran over the 2-hour mark when they did the gassers at the end and it was real hot. I mean,
not
really,
the last practice that the last they had one, last week.
Not the 102 degree day, but the week before that, they did gassers at the end, and the practice. I remember leaving the field and saying, "What's going on? Are they still out there?" And someone said, "Yeah, they're doing gassers." I mean, and I think that sent
a few folks to their phones.
Some guys to their phones. It was real hot, and they were running real long.
Well, I've been there before, you know, and the person whose ultimate responsibility is to call the union is the union rep.
Mm-hmm.
Who is it in that locker room now?
I don't know who.
Is it Ernest?
I'm not sure if it's Ernest or if it's somebody else.
I know Maurice expressed interest in it, but I don't know.
But, you know, either way, I mean, that's what a union rep's job is to do. I mean, he has to be able to represent his players. If a player comes to him, because I've been there.
Yeah.
Okay, I had to make that phone call back in 95. But it's his responsibility. If players come up to him and say, "Hey, look, we were on the field today for two and a half hour practice. Hey, look, we were on the field today, and, hey, my shoulders are getting bumped and bruised up. We're not supposed to have, you know, live contact, and this is live. You know, I'm worried about my physical well-being and getting to a season to be able to earn a real check." It's that representative's responsibility to make that phone call to the union. That does not make him a snitch, people.
No.
It makes him a person who is doing his job. That's all.
Mojo should never be a rep.
So it doesn't matter. It does not matter who called. And so folks in Jacksonville are just dying to know who it was.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Why do you say that?
He's too militant. He'd get himself in trouble. You got to be very, very diplomatic to be a rep. I mean, you can embitter yourself, estrange yourself with your team. Mojo, he'll talk.
Let's take a break. We'll return with more Jaguars this week. But first, season ticket holders, for each and every person you refer who actually buys season tickets, you'll be entered into the Super Bowl referral sweepstakes. That means you could win a trip to this year's Super Bowl in Dallas. Call 633-2000 for more information. More Jaguars this week right after this on News Talk Radio. WOKV, depend on it. Welcome back to Jaguars this week on a Wednesday evening in June. When you're looking for department store style, folks, at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart, 7 Jacksonville locations. Stein Mart, once you go, you get it. Back with Jeff Loggeman, Vic Ketchman. Joe Fortunato taking your calls at 355-NFL-1, 355-6351, right in the middle of the dead zone, at the very beginning of the dead zone.
Well, we're kind of in the dead zone, but Vic Ketchman made the beginning of the dead zone kind of exciting because he was the snitch that turned the Jaguars in for being too intense. And
like
I said that last week. I said, Vic, I said, you're going to rat him out. Didn't I say that last week? Bang! Guess what happened? The next day.
I would have thought maybe that the coach might have called himself in just to have the storyline to
That's
be able
right.
to say.
That's yeah. right. He's not upset with me. Next season when their theme is we work too hard, all right? When they're rallying around this we work too hard theme. Remember? I did it.
I will say this.
Or the blame. You positioned yourself perfectly, Ketchman.
That's right.
To kind of summarize the OTAs, though, I mean, you were right on the money in describing it in your article, and that it was one of the most competitive, intense OTAs that I have ever seen here, which is a signal to me that means, most importantly, that this roster is getting better and it's getting competitive.
Coughlin would have blushed.
Oh, I mean, really?
Wow.
When you – and it is kind of – when people are like, well, how do they not go? You know, is it the player's fault? Is it the coach's fault? Hey, look, I mean, you're talking about players that are trying to maintain a job that could pay them millions of dollars.
Right.
Millions of dollars. So
for a very finite period of time.
You understand what – and the players are the ones that take the intensity up. The coaches have to rein that in. But it's hard because as a coach, you want to see guys compete. And guys are competing for a roster spot that could be worth millions of dollars. Millions. I mean, think about it. If a guy makes it, if he sticks on a roster, a young player sticks on a roster for 1 year, if he sticks, that means that he's going to make a really good paycheck in the first year. But it could potentially mean that he sticks and people recognize that he was on a roster. And that could turn into up to 10, $10 million or more. I mean, who knows where it could lead?
Right.
So
long term,
you understand why that the intensity gets to where it's at in OTAs, because guys are trying to put food on the table. Yep. And more than food, you know, Mercedes in the garage. Yeah. Of a house that, you know, they could never afford if they weren't playing football. You know,
plus this isn't a team of stars. This isn't a team of established stars. You probably, I would say that more than 50% of the roster has to be concerned about making the team.
Yeah, because that's been the last couple of years with Gene Smith.
Is that the
formula?
Is that an exaggeration? 50% of the roster.
Is what?
Have to concern themselves with up for grabs, making the team. I'd like to go down through the roster.
I would say 75% of the roster is determined at the conclusion of OTAs.
Let's look at that in the break.
All right, it'd be a great thing to look at. Mm-hmm. I mean, to go by position. I mean, we could
just count up the guys.
We could cut our roster right now based on OTAs.
Well, there you go. Real quick, before we have to break for news here in the next 3 minutes. What will a new CBA and an 18-game schedule likely do to the off-season program?
They're going to revisit everything.
How will it? But give the listeners some concrete ideas of what you think might happen.
I said to Coach Del Rio a few days ago, we were talking about this, and I said, I think, Jack, what you're going to get when you get a new CBA is you're going to get a mini camp in May and a mini camp in June, and that's it until training camp. And I think the reason you're going to get that is because the thing that these players hate the most is being held captive all spring. In other words, tell me what weekends I have to be there and let me get there and do my work and then go on with my life, you know, in other places.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't think it's that way for everybody. I think there are certain people that really don't like it, but a lot of it depends on what market you're in. Like, I mean, guys don't like living in Buffalo in the offseason and having all these OTAs because they don't want to live in Buffalo. Guys have enjoyed living in Jacksonville. They like the OTAs because, I don't want to say the OTAs, but they like the off-season conditioning program because it provides them a great opportunity to have competitive workouts. Because, I mean, you can work out on your own all you want. You get better. At least my experience was I always got better. I got improved physically when I was in that competitive atmosphere in the weight room with my teammates. But I don't think players just want to get rid of it altogether. I think some guys like it, and I think with free agency you have to have some aspect of OTAs because turnover happens. And to assimilate guys to the system, you need to have a certain amount of off-the-field activity.
Well, here's what I think you're going to get. Right now as it stands, we got 14 OTAs, and how many practices in mini camp? Five? I think it was five.
Absolutely. Two days.
Two and one.
Okay, so that's 19. All right, let's go with 5 and 5, 2 weekends, a May weekend and a June weekend. 5 and 5, that's 10. That means 9 left. You got 9 left over?
Yes.
And you tack it on at the beginning of training camp, you go longer in training camp. That's what I think.
Why would you want to go longer in training camp?
Well, because you're gonna spring into the regular season sooner, before Labor Day.
What, you're talking about when they go to an 18-game schedule? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, 18-game schedule.
The way I understand it, they're not talking about starting earlier. Uh-uh. They're talking about
finishing later,
pushing this into February.
To President's Day weekend.
I think that's a big mistake. Well, I think that's a big mistake.
President's Day weekend, because then you'd have the Super Bowl in on Monday.
Think about it. What happens in the sporting world after the Super Bowl for 2 weeks? Can you name
it? Well, I mean, there's basketball season. There's hockey season.
Yeah. But I mean regular season stuff, right? I mean, could anything take away from the attractiveness or the allure of NFL?
You certainly
don't want
the Olympics.
You put the Olympics up against the NFL?
Oh, you don't want to play the Super Bowl opposite the Olympics. That's just not the way they do it.
Yeah, but I mean, football is, you know, on a couple of days. The Olympic runs 7 days a
week.
The
NFL can do anything it wants. It can play anytime it wants. I just don't think it would be smart to push those playoff games in places like Buffalo into February. I mean, you're talking about more games later in the year.
But you're not going to start, okay, before everybody goes back to school. You know, before
they
families are. Yeah, but they're not going
to
do that.
I know for a fact that they are looking at pushing it to President's Day weekend because you could have the Super Bowl on Sunday and everyone has Monday
so
off.
So that's the middle of February?
Yeah.
Okay, you could get away with that. You could get away with that. But I still think that you're going to have to do a little more with training camp. You know,
well, if that's an 18-game schedule, okay, right. You've got two preseason games, and what would you do? Would you ask the players to come in 2 weeks prior to the first preseason game?
No, just a few days earlier.
A few days before the first preseason game?
No. Training camp instead of 1 week before – I'm sorry, instead of 2 weeks before your first preseason game – make it like 18 days before your first preseason game.
Yeah, but you'd have to add a little bit to
that. Right, just add on.
Because typically you would have 6 weeks of training camp anyway.
Hold that thought. We'll come back with more Jaguars this week after the news here at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to Jaguars This Week on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. Welcome back to Jaguars This Week. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, Vic Ketchman, Joe Fortunato for the next 22 minutes. Entertaining, enlightening, trying to stay away from the dead zone.
What's the date of the supplemental draft?
July 15th, correct?
Oh, it's that late?
I think it is. Let me double check on that.
Yeah, Harvey Unga is the star of this year's supplemental draft. And this guy's a real player now. He's the leading rusher in Brigham Young University history. He was on his way to becoming a high pick next year. I'm not going to say first round pick because I don't know that for a fact. But this is a very good football player.
July 15th.
Okay. He will almost certainly be selected in the supplemental draft. They're kind of lining up for him.
How many guys have declared? Because most of the guys that do have had issues at school, whether they lost eligibility.
He lost eligibility.
Breaking rules or have had legal problems, whatever it may be. How many have declared?
Unga's the only one I know, the only one of whom I know that is of any significance.
Yeah. I've seen three names, but that's the only one I've heard.
What are the other names?
I'll look them up. I don't know them off the top of my head, but I've seen three names listed.
Yeah, I saw a couple other guys, but they're guys that aren't going to be drafted, aren't likely to be picked in a supplemental draft.
What did we see? Houston a couple years ago take that running back out of
Georgia Tech
with a second-round pick?
Yes. And he was a zero.
He did nothing.
This guy here, I'm hearing Houston likes him. I'm hearing Miami really likes him. I'm hearing three or four other teams, too. There's actually going to be a competition for this guy. And it's he's gonna be a nice little dead zone story, because there's some story there.
The three names that are eligible for the supplemental draft: running back from Northwestern State, Quentin Castile; Brigham Young running back Harvey Unga; and Truman State H-back Vanessa Imakpai.
Whatever. Those other guys are not, from my understanding, are not draftable. They're going to achieve eligibility through the undrafted. They've achieved that eligibility, and they are going to likely be signed an undrafted free agency. But this guy here, the Dolphins, who knows? I don't think they would use a first-round pick.
Well, Ronnie Brown's coming back off of a knee injury, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, from my understanding, Parcells really likes this guy. He could use a second-round pick on him.
6 foot, 237 pounds, big guy.
Big guy, catches the ball, he's powerful. He's a Brigham Young back, which means that there's, more finesse there than power. But this guy's a good player.
But you don't see the Jaguars being interested in this. They've drafted.
No, I don't see them being interested because Deji Kareem put on a show in OTAs, and Rashad Jennings was every bit the player in OTAs that he was in last year's OTAs, and of course Maurice Jones-Drew is a star, and Greg Jones is coming back, so I don't see the Jaguars having any interest in this guy, but he's probably the first legitimate supplemental draft star player I don't know, since Bernie Kosar now.
Well, and for those that are wondering, well, what did he do to break a rule? BYU, no premarital sex.
Shit! Not a lot of talk about this.
What? That's the rule. people are speculating that that's the rule that he broke.
A Mormon school that is against their view, so.
Yeah, I'd have been ineligible, too.
And his girlfriend also withdrew from the school, so.
Yeah, was she a basketball player or something?
I don't know.
Something like that. It's their rules.
They said it out when they go to school there, so.
I prefer forgiveness to rigidness, but, you know, it's their school, and he agreed to it, so I guess, you know.
He did.
But, you know, I mean, this guy's really, this is a loss. He was going to be a high pick. You know, he was going to achieve some real fame. What are you laughing at?
He's laughing that you said premarital sex and you said forgiveness to rigidness.
Because I used the word rigidness.
Oh,
look, like a chow.
I know what he's laughing about, but I don't even.
Kyle's going to let that go.
Joe doesn't. I'm sorry. Joe doesn't. So.
Jeez. But.
You said it. You did.
Well, I'm innocent of thought. You know, I'm
Fooey.
He was going to be a high. Who knows? He might have achieved first round selection. So he's lost a lot of money.
What was the name of the running back from Georgia Tech a couple of years ago? I can't think of his name. He did nothing.
No, he was a dog.
And then he was a second round pick.
All right, so Bernie Kosar was one, and then
Jared
there
was Gaither, the offensive tackle for the Ravens.
Yeah, and that was Steve Walsh was a supplemental guy.
He was
a first round pick in a supplemental draft by the Cowboys. Somebody else. There was a guy in the '90s who turned out to be a real star. I'm thinking, who the heck was it?
Well, but they're so few and far between.
Yeah.
I can't remember one in other than Jared Gaither in the last 10 years.
Gene Smith isn't going to forfeit a draft pick in next year's April draft. He's not going to use it in a supplemental draft because I know that they want to store as many draft picks as they can so they can position themselves to tap into that quarterback crop. Next year's draft is the quarterback draft for the Jaguars.
Yes.
I mean, I promise you.
Regardless of how well David plays.
I will swim the St. John's at its widest point if the Jaguars don't draft a quarterback next April. Write it down.
And they're going to trail him in the boat.
Hmm? They're going to get one.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's somewhere. Six first-round possibilities, right? That's what they're talking about?
A minimum of six. I mean, there are guys who most people don't know the names. The kid from Idaho, 6'5" guy, with a big year, he's going to jump he's going to jump to the top of the crop. We know about the Christian Ponders and the Jake Lockers and the Ryan Mallets. There's a guy at Delaware, Pat Devlin.
The last Delaware quarterback turned out to be
pretty
good.
He's the next Joe Flacco. What?
Joe is reminding me that Brian Bosworth was a supplemental draft choice also.
That's right. That's why, because I did a story on Kyle Bosworth recently, and I remember having written that. That's it. Yep.
He was one of my, I don't want to say
from
heroes.
Through that, Edis. Thanks,
but
Rob.
I mean, when I was growing up, you know, Brian Bosworth was bigger than life.
Yeah, I lived in the Big Eight.
I mean, bigger than life.
See, how a player's shoulder injury, you know, ruined his career.
If he had shoulders, I think he would have been one of the great ones.
I told Kyle that I saw one of the most unforgettable things about his. It was in a game that his cousin, the Boz, was in.
Uncle.
I'm sorry. It was the Steelers and Seahawks, and the Steelers had a feisty little replacement player guard, a guy named Brian Blankenship. He hung on for a few years.
Well, yeah.
He's the guy that got cut by the Colts because. In protesting their reluctance to do a new contract and negotiate a new contract with him, he went out to practice with his horseshoes turned upside down. So they cut him. Anyhow, the Boz on this day was wearing some kind of Little Red Riding hood under his helmet with these drawstrings, you know, hanging out at the bottom of the, you know, under his chin. These long strings with a slide on it.
Yeah.
You know, and it was hanging way down. It was a goofy thing, but nobody could figure out what was under the helmet except he saw these strings. With this crazy Blankenship, the whole game, he's grabbing at him. He wants to grab these strings. Finally, he got him, and he rips out this little hoodie thing, you know, from out from under the helmet with the strings. Looks at it and starts to twirl it. It's the crazy stuff you remember, you know.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. More Jaguars this week in a moment on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it. Moving right along towards the top of the hour, about 8 minutes left in the show. By the time we go to the phone lines, we've got Wes in Orange Park. Hello, Wes. How are you tonight?
Hey, I'm doing great, guys. How are y'all doing?
Good.
Hey, one comment and a question about two players. First comment is Paul Kowarski, who writes for ESPN, was asked which rookie most impressed him during the underwear league. And he said he would limit it to the first two players for each team, just to limit it to the limit the amount of players he had to discuss. And he said Tyson Alualu was the guy that impressed him most out of all the team's draft picks. But my questions are, for Vic and Jeff, two things. One, Zach Miller, it seems like each year he's kind of banged up and hurt with, like, a, I guess, soft muscle injury. So I want to know what you guys really think is going on with him and how far back he's set. And then our defensive back that we drafted to be a punt returner, I kind of read on some website, I forget which one it was, he was having a hard time fielding punts. And I'll know how you guys feel about him after watching him in the spring league. Thanks, guys. Have a great evening.
I'll do the Zach Miller thing. I'll let you do the rookie pick. Zach Miller last year had a bone bruise. I mean, this is not a soft tissue injury. Bone bruise, what they worry about with a bone bruise in the knee is that it could lead to the lack of cartilage in a knee joint, which could become an injury that basically you never get rid of. If you don't let the swelling in that area heal on a bone bruise, you could be requiring microfracture surgery, which means you lost cartilage, you need to find a substitute for it. And trust me, I had it and it never goes away.
Right.
This year, he has a foot injury. And I guess this is a soft tissue injury, but, I mean, this is like a ligament in a foot. It's a serious injury. And I think what they're doing is they're just being very cautious. Because, I mean, to be aggressive for what?
Is this a quarterback camp injury?
I think that's, yeah, because he didn't really – I mean, since the beginning
he was
OTAs, I mean, that was
minicamp.
It.
He was out in minicamp.
Yeah, so it was a quarterback camp injury.
See, you've got to talk about this. I mean, this is – how many camps do you need? Quarterback camp, minicamp, OTAs, well, training
see,
camp.
A quarterback camp, if you've named something a camp, I mean – that should count towards your OTA days.
This was purely voluntary. This counted toward nothing.
Well, I mean, when you have a quarterback camp, it kind of implies that this is a camp for everybody to be there.
But there was a February event, was it? Not a March. A March event. Was it March or February? Hey, it was.
I want to say April, but I don't know. I don't know exactly when it was because, I mean, it wasn't something that, you know, they said, hey, there's this. Come watch.
Yeah. If they were to lose him, I don't know if this injury is serious or not, but it has lingered through April, May, and June. Oh, it would be devastating. He is expected to be a major weapon in this team's offense this year.
And he is. I mean, he's going to be. I understand what they're doing, you know, and do I know what the exact nature of the injury is? Yes. Can I say it? No. I mean, it's something that I've had before. It's something that caution is the best thing. And can he recover from it completely? Yes. Not a problem.
Right.
But if you don't let it heal, then this can become a major problem. But once it's healed, it's fine.
You had a foot injury at one point, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about December of 1995.
Yeah.
And I know exactly what he's talking about. He's talking about a Liz Frank. Because, that's what he had.
Is that the same as plantar fasciitis?
No, it's different. Plantar fasciitis
that's
the instep?
Underneath your foot, your arch, you have a tendon that goes from the front of your foot back and it joins at the heel.
Okay.
A Liz Frank is a joint on the top of your foot, and it's kind of between the first and second, third metatarsals in that little area.
Right. And, I know his name.
And it's got a, yeah, it's got a crazy name because of a guy that fell off a horse and his foot got stuck in
Napoleon
a saddle.
Surgeon.
And it, yeah, and it bent his foot in a crazy way.
It's actually not Liz. It's L-I-S-F-R-A-N-C. It's Liz Frank.
Liz Frank, yeah.
Yeah, but everybody says Liz.
Yeah.
Everybody says it with a Z.
Yeah.
But I think he's got something going on that's similar to that. He looks great.
Boy, he's big.
I mean, he's put on weight. And it's not like he's gotten, you know, he's not 265 pounds and all of a sudden he wants to become the next Kyle Brady and, right. and block everybody up and down the field.
But he told us in that final Jaguars All Access that he was going to put on weight.
He had a conversation with said he was going to. The guy looks like he doesn't have an ounce of fat on him. He said he's faster when he's been able to run. And I think he's been doing some, I think it's mostly real structured stuff where it's like straight ahead. Been doing a lot of work on the bike.
Oh, man, I hope they don't lose him. I mean, I really think that he is a touchdown maker for this team. I really think that he is their Dallas Clark. I think he can be good, really, really good.
You know, when
he was in the Cleveland game.
I was just about to say
when we go out to the field, you know, there's an area where injured players work. You know, and we've seen all the guys that have right. been kind of through there in the OTAs because they are very cautious with guys. He's been the guy that's been there pretty much the entire way, and hasn't been on the field at all. And, you know, you've got, you know, four, five, six guys that changes day to day. The guy works out over there, I mean, at an insane level.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets after it. So the disappointing thing is that he doesn't get the on-the-field stuff for a player that was a college quarterback. Boy, you really want him to take all of those repetitions that he can get. But, again, you got to use caution.
Who do you think was the Underwear League MVP? In other words, Mr. May.
I don't know. I mean, if I had to throw just a couple names out there, and obviously this is Underwear League, I thought Tyson Alualu and Larry Hart.
Well, early on,
fantastic.
Alualu was fantastic until.
But then he didn't practice a couple days.
Yeah. What are you hearing there? Back?
Yeah.
Sore back?
Not exactly sure. He's fine now. Yeah. Maybe he practiced the last one on Thursday. But I thought those two looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Cox was impressive.
Derek Cox looked good. Tyquan Underwood, I thought, was very good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I had to say that there was one disappointing area, you know, as good as Troy Williamson looked last year in training camp, and we were just going, hey, mm-hmm. you know, it looks like they may have something here. He didn't give you that impression in OTAs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that it's, you know, it's the veteran thing. Hey, look, you know, it's you know, it's time to let these young guys go. And you didn't see Troy running a lot of routes. But, I mean, I want to see him have that training camp that he had last year. And when the conversation has been with the coaches, you know, where they're talking about Jarrett Dillard and the other guys being, you know, 3 and 4 – you know,
and they don't mention him.
I haven't heard his name mentioned. Now, are they assuming he's 2?
Who?
Troy?
Number two is Mike Thomas. Jack said it, and right behind him, Jared Dillard would be 3rd. And on Underwood, he said Underwood is a leader for number 4.
Now, where's Troy?
He never used his name. He never mentioned his name. I think he's on the outs.
That'll do it for the show this evening, folks. Talk to you next Wednesday night for another riveting edition of Jaguars This Week.